Welcome to The Deal with Animals. I'm Marika Bell, answer zoologist, CPDT certified dog trainer, and an animal myself. This is a podcast about the connection and interaction between humans and other animals.
For the next 2 weeks, we're going to present you with a mini-series focusing on the connection of Puget Sound waterways and wildlife corridors, and both human and non-human animal communities' connections to these. In the first episode, I'm talking with local volunteer naturalist and salmon watcher for the city of Bellevue, Sally Lawrence. Sally and I first met coincidentally on Coal Creek Trail in Bellevue. Coal Creek's an important natural wildlife corridor for the greater Seattle area and King County. And this is a time-sensitive issue because there's going to be a rally coming up in a couple of weeks, and I wanted to make sure that my local listeners could arrange to come to this rally, but also my non-local listeners who also care about wildlife corridors, history, and protecting natural areas, can also get involved.
Okay, just a quick update for my local listeners. The rally is going to be held at noon PST at Newcastle Beach Park. There's going to be some walking routes options starting at Redtown Trailhead earlier, so I'll link the official announcement on my Facebook page as soon as it's available.
Why should everyone care about a small park in Bellevue, Washington called Cold Creek? Well, this special episode is going to investigate just that question. We're going to discuss why Coal Creek and other parks like it should be important to all of us, not just for those people who live nearby. We're going to talk about how wildlife corridors affect the entire ecosystem, not just the animals living in the area. Wildlife corridors that include salmon spawning creeks are of particular importance to the wildlife and to the forest, and frankly, to anyone who enjoys seeing orcas in the Pacific Northwest. So when you listen today, I would love for you to use this episode to think about areas near you, where you live, that are wildlife corridors, that are beautiful natural areas, that all people, humans and non-humans, can enjoy and care for. Think about an area near you, and then think about what we can do to save Coal Creek and areas like it. This is not just a matter of not in my backyard, because it's not just our backyard. It's salmon's backyard. It's orca's backyard. It's evergreen's backyard. It's big leaf maple's backyard. And if we want to continue to share these species with our children in more than just pictures, then we need to make a commitment now to save these species, not just once, but over and over again from any developer that wants to come in, flatten land, and build McMansions. Thank you for joining me while we investigate the question, what's the deal with animals?
I love this question. What's the deal with animals?
What do I think is the deal with animals? I think the deal with animals, I think is off. They're awesome.
I think the deal with animals is...
What is the deal with animals? Oh gosh.
So the deal with animals, you know?
What the deal with animals is that
really the deal with animals for us.
So what do you think is the deal with animals? Would you please introduce yourself and share your preferred pronouns?
Yes, my name is Sally Lawrence, and I prefer she and her. And I live in Bellevue, Washington, and Marika and I met on the trail, which is a really good meeting place.
Start from there and say, yeah, because we met,
I was walking down a trail that I actually hadn't been on in a little while. I kind of like to mix up my trails, and there's so many good ones to choose from in this area, aren't there?
Yeah.
But I was wanting to see a waterfall, but I wasn't having to walk too far. And that's the perfect trail for that, isn't it? Because that, what is the official name of that trail?
That is called the Coal Creek Trail, and it's in the south part of Bellevue, south of I-90. And it is a public park, part of Bellevue's Coal Creek Natural Area. And the creek itself is what's really cool about that trail is it comes very close to the creek in many spots. We would not build a trail so close to a creek now in contemporary times because we're trying to be so much more protective of water, particularly if it's a salmon creek. But it's a historic trail, and it gives families and kids such a wonderful opportunity to see a rushing water. Mm-hmm. And so, Marika, you and I were at the waterfall, I think, when we met.
Yeah.
And that's a little iconic waterfall. I think it's like 8 feet high. And Bellevue, the city of Bellevue, has put it on one of their welcome signs to the city down there on, I think the street is called Newcastle Coal Creek Road, just next to the golf course there.
That's right.
So that was a great place to find a waterfall. And I was in the middle of doing a study that's related to what I'll talk about today, Save Coal Creek. I was trying to figure out which of the many tributaries to Coal Creek actually flows through our summer dry season. In this part of the world, we have a really, really dry summer between about July 15th and this year it extended right through October. We had such a dry fall. We had a couple little rainfalls there in October, but some of the tributaries I was looking at didn't start flowing until late November. So it was unusually dry.
Okay. So in this next segment, Sally and I are going to talk a little bit about the area in question. So I've linked a map in the show notes for you to take a look at and give yourself a clear idea for the layout. I remember the last few times I actually went down to that waterfall area was in the summer and it was dry. There was no waterfall there. And that was a surprise to me.
Yeah, the waterfall that's up upstream of Lakemont does go dry in the summer. The one that is down in the Bellevue Park is a perennial fall. That one does go through the summer. It gets pretty, you can see the stream flow is less, but it's definitely perennial.
Is that the one that if you keep going down that trail, which, by the way, I'll tell everybody, it's a really nice trail for kids, too, because it is so flat and relatively wide. And if your kids are new to, you know, walking through the woods and you're worried about, you know, toddlers falling over and stuff, it's a really good trail because it goes for a little while and is just straight and flat. And then you have options of going into slightly different offshoot trails. And the one I really like is called Primrose Loop.
Yes.
Is that the one you were talking about with that waterfall doesn't dry up at the bottom of Primrose Loop?
Actually, both of the ones that I've seen along the Coal Creek Trail are perennial.
Okay.
It's possible the one that where I believe I met you, it looked really like low flow, and it was low flow because I think that was October maybe when you and I talked.
Yeah, it had just started, I think, because there was water in the creek at that point.
Yeah, it does go dry just above that waterfall, and it's kind of remarkable because that's the old main stem of Coal Creek that originates up on Cougar Mountain. That's another public park and natural area. It's called Cougar Mountain Regional Wildland Park. So if you're going on the east side of Lakemont Boulevard, that's that King County Park, and there's many miles of trails in there. It's another wonderful experience for families with kids.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to live up right near here. So it's great. And so those are two separate parks, basically bisected by Lakemont Boulevard, which is a fairly busy two-lane boulevard connecting Lakemont to Newcastle?
Newcastle. Yep.
Yeah.
Newcastle. Yep.
So You have to cross that street to get from one park to the other. And there's really no parking on the near the trail I was at. All the parking is on the King County side, on the parkland side. And then you have to cross that busy street to get there.
You're absolutely right. Yes.
That's part of what we wanted to talk about today, isn't it? Because wildlife also has to cross somewhere.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a great launching point for mentioning this effort that I'm part of. This effort to save a 12-acre property right next to Lakemont Boulevard from a development. A developer owns it and plans 35 homes. And we know we need housing locally, but this particular location is incredibly poor location for a housing development for some of the reasons you just mentioned. Lakemont Boulevard, which it would front on, it would be on the west side of Lakemont, is incredibly busy, two-lane highway. They can't widen it because there's really steep bluff on the west side. Mm-hmm. And it does bisect these two parks. You put that very well. We've described this 12-acre property as kind of a wedge between the two parks. So on the west side, it's City of Bellevue's Coal Creek Natural Area, a really big, it's the city's biggest natural area, 440 acres. And then on the east side, King County's Cougar Mountain Regional Wildland Park, which is King County's largest park, more than 3,000 acres. Both of them are wonderful hiking areas, exploring areas, just a place to sit down and enjoy nature. So this development would separate those two natural areas. And you've also mentioned the issue with crossing the street. If you're a human being wanting to cross for hiking purposes, or if you need to park on the east side, which is the only parking, and then you want to walk west into the Coal Creek Natural Area, you have to cross Lakemont. There's no crossing markings, but it's the obvious place to cross. So I always wear my yellow safety vest because the traffic, particularly coming from Newcastle, cars don't have a long sight line. They're coming around a curve and they're coming down into a dip and up again to go up Lakemont. So crossing is hazardous for humans, and it's also hazardous for wildlife. This 12-acre property was formerly the homestead of a coal mining family that owned it for 100 years, and they didn't have any fencing, and they knew that wildlife would cross there. So the occasional deer or bobcat or bear, you don't see them usually. You might see deer even to this day. But the wildlife have a hazardous crossing, and I'm speculating that they may, wildlife is actually pretty smart. I'm speculating they wait till the quieter times of the night when they know there's less traffic, and possibly that is how they do get across. We know there have been a few animal collisions. We don't have very good records. But wildlife do need to cross over onto the west side because some of those streams on the east side do dry up in the late summer. So they need to cross over to get some water. So Save Coal Creek is about preserving this 12-acre property, and we're advocating that the City of Bellevue purchase it from the developer to create a public park, and it would be an extension of the existing Coal Creek Natural Area, which already surrounds it on three sides. So it just, mm-hmm. it kind of makes sense geographically that these should be part of the same space. So besides the fact that the development would be kind of adding traffic on a hazardous road, it's if you lived in one of those future houses, which we hope won't be built, it's quite isolated. You would have to drive more than a mile in either direction to get to a grocery store. There's no transit. And if you know anything about contemporary city planning, as we grow our cities, the big push is for new homes to be near transit, near grocery stores, so people don't have to get in their car to get everything. It's quite isolated. If you were a family with an 8 and a 10-year-old and they wanted to ride their bikes to the nearest neighborhood to play with friends, yeah. As a responsible parent, you would never, never let them get on a bike on Lakemont. It's just really crazy, crazy dangerous. So that's the
market. There's nowhere to walk on Lakemont at all, right? In that section, is there? It's completely road.
There's no sidewalk there. The developer would be required to put a sidewalk immediately in front of the property, but they are not required to connect it to the neighboring neighborhoods. So that would impose an expense on the part of the city. If they were to decide to build sidewalk, it would be a city expense.
Yeah. And that bites in more to the wild area too, because that whole area is so natural at the moment. You were mentioning at one point that this is a salmon stream. What does that mean?
Salmon stream means it does have a resident native population of salmon. It's very small because Coal Creek has had a number of human activities on it that have kind of hammered it over the years. This was a coal mining area right where Redtown Trailhead is and where this coal mining homestead is. But salmon have always come back. They go to the Pacific for their maturation, their adult life from their natal stream. But that means they cross through Lake Washington, which is freshwater, and out to Puget Sound and out to the Pacific. And when they return, they come back to their natal stream, in this case, Coal Creek. So we have a remnant population of native Chinook and Coho. It's not very many, but the city of Bellevue has made a number of improvements since the year 2000. They've spent more than $25 million on improving the riparian habitat for salmon. And adding some tree canopy, and just generally making the conditions better. Because there are a lot of housing developments along Coal Creek that were built many years ago, they didn't necessarily require the kind of protections that we do require today. But we know that Coal Creek is a good salmon creek if we can continue those improvements. For the last two falls, I've been a salmon watcher. That's a volunteer for the Bellevue Stream Team. And I go to a particular location down in Newport Shores, which is near the mouth of Coal Creek, and check the creek twice a week for 15 minutes to see if there are salmon coming back. And as part of that, I was able to see the release of some hatchery salmon from the Issaquah hatchery, which is our neighboring town. And if they have an excess of adult coho, they release them into Coal Creek. And they did that early November of both 2021 and 2022. They released about 500 adult coho each of those two falls, and we were able to see the adult fish swimming upstream. They were very vigorous, they were healthy. The coho get this gorgeous red color on their belly. It's really quite exciting to see these adult fish going upstream, and so they clearly liked being out in this stream. The water was cold enough. You need really cold water for salmon. And we know that they formed the reds, that's the nests that the females form by swishing their tail around in the gravel. So besides the volunteers like myself, the city of Bellevue has Department of Fish and Wildlife professionals checking the creek, and they've recorded where the salmon have actually spawned. And we're quite sure. Yeah, we're quite sure this spawning has been successful in the past, because It takes about 3 years for the Chinook to go to spend a couple years out at sea and then come back. And they've seen a bump in the returns 3 years after those fall releases. So that is a pretty good indicator that the spawning 3 years prior was successful.
Excellent. And how long have they been releasing salmon in that stream?
They have not done it every year. I think the records I've seen go back to about 2010, and they've done it maybe every 2 or 3 years. I was really lucky that both of the last 2 years, I was able to see those releases.
So when those salmon are released, they're heading out to the ocean at that point?
No, they're actually going upstream. They haven't spawned yet.
But these are salmon that have been raised in the hatchery in Issaquah.
Juveniles went to sea, came back as an adults, and it's only when the Issaquah hatchery gets an excess of return of adults that they parcel out a few of those adults, in this case, like 500, and release them in Coal Creek. So those adults have come back from the ocean, gone to the Issaquah hatchery, and we have transported them to Coal Creek. So it's not their natal stream, but they are not quite that picky. They know it's a natural stream, it smells good, and they're fecund. They're really ready to spawn. They have all those hormones, and they have all that instinct pressing them to go upstream at that point and find a place to spawn.
Great. So basically, they're refilling that stream with any of the salmon that hatch from that stream at that point will go out and come back to that stream.
That's right. And we're pretty sure based on the data that it's been successful in the past.
So what would it mean if this development is built pretty much right above that waterfall that we've been talking about? Runoff from building, runoff from just people living there, paved parking and a lot more cars right there above the stream and above the waterfall. What would that mean to the salmon coming back?
It's pretty clear that development impacts any salmon stream, any fish stream negatively. You've mentioned the runoff. It carries contaminants from our car tires, our oils and petroleum products. We don't have any laws restricting homeowners from using the occasional pesticide in their garden or herbicide, and those things would also get washed into the nearby stream. So just the fact that this, what is currently mostly open space with pasture grasses and a lot of trees, this particular development would remove 85 mature trees. We need that tree canopy to keep the streams cool. And the pasture grasses and the meadow grasses offer a buffer that protect, as rainwater washes off stuff from us humans, from our activities, these buffer grasses protect the stream. And so having a development there simply reduces the width of the buffers. The trees, if the trees are gone, that reduces the quality and the width of the buffers as well.
Right. So it would not be good news overall if there was a big development put in there and a lot more traffic and a lot more people right there. So now we know about the Save Coal Creek project now. Let's go a little bit backwards and talk about how you got involved.
Great question. So my background is I was a biologist as an undergrad. And the college I went to, it was all about sort of pre-med studies, and that just wasn't me. So I ended up working in laboratories. I was always fascinated by wildlife, but never really studied it. Then I went to graduate school in biological oceanography, got a master's, And I kind of love research, but I didn't like being overly focused on one tiny question. So I finished the master's. And then I just took a whole series of jobs. I was kind of chasing my husband around the country as he got his jobs. So I worked as a science writer for universities, and I was a consultant, always working on kind of water-related problems, ocean. And when we started living in Bellevue, we had two little kids at this point. I was working for a consulting firm in Seattle and doing the big commute across the bridge. And our kids were in grade school. And I just said, oh, I can't do this anymore. I've got to find a job that will let me have a little more sane life. So I looked around and decided I wanted to work for State Department of Ecology, which had an office right here in Bellevue. But the kind of background I would need to do that, I needed to know a lot about freshwater streams, because that was a real big focus of their protection work. And so I did a volunteer project on Coal Creek with a stream team, and learned to measure bankful width and look for sources of erosion in Coal Creek. And it wasn't my neighborhood creek. I live in a different part of Bellevue. But that experience, I worked with other volunteers, just working in Coal Creek when, 20 years ago, I was just astounded at how beautiful it is. And, it's not completely natural. It does have the impacts of the mining industry has kind of altered the hydrology in places. And if you hike along the creek, sometimes you see pieces of iron equipment. Mm-hmm. There's a place where the creek was lined by wooden beams, kind of creating a flume, because the miners were using the creek for water power. They had a little steam generating plant going right there near Redtown Trailhead. So that got me into my job with Department of Ecology, where I was a water quality specialist. And it also introduced me to Coal Creek. So that's kind of how I got here. I'm retired now, but it's been, I learned a lot on the job. I was always fascinated by the water and the wildlife and the salmon. And I saw my first American dipper on Coal Creek. That's a really cute little bird. It's gray color. It's kind of slate gray colored, about the size of a junco. And they perch on logs and rocks, and they're right in the stream with their feet clutching the rock or the log, and they dip their head into the water. They can actually swim underwater. They're incredibly agile and muscular, and they're eating stream insects. And so if you see a dipper in a stream, you know it's a clean stream. The water quality is very good. It's very cold. You'll see them up in the mountains. I've seen them on the Sauk River in the North Cascades.
So that day that we met on the trail for the first time, I continued my walk and went down into Primrose Loop and was looking over the bridge there at the stream, and I saw a songbird swimming. And I thought, I must be seeing something weird, because I've never heard of a songbird that could swim. So I took out my camera and I did a little video of it and looked it up. And lo and behold, it was an American dipper. And I had never even heard of them before or seen them before. And it was so cool because, yeah, who knew that a songbird could just go for a swim like a duck? It was so interesting to watch.
Yeah, I've seen your video on the Save Coal Creek Facebook page. So thank you for posting it. But yeah, I get very excited when I see an American dipper. So they really are an indicator of a clear, clean stream, but also you usually don't see them if there's a lot of people around or a lot of houses around. You're not going to find them on Kelsey Creek in Bellevue, which is pretty much a creek that flows through commercial and housing developments. They're really an indicator of a forested stream that doesn't have to be pristine, but it should be pretty quiet. And you almost have to go and, you were lucky, you saw it from the bridge, but you almost have to go and sit by the stream bank in a place where the water is cascading. They love places where the water's really moving. And and if you are quiet, sometimes the birds will come to you. And that was another thing I wanted to share with people about enjoying nature. We all sort of go out with our cameras and we want to hunt it down, right? We want to catch something beautiful. And sometimes you've got to just sit. It might be your backyard. It might be the Bellevue Botanical Garden. Sometimes you need to just sit and start looking. And then nature kind of opens up to you, whether it's through your ears, listening, or through, you know, the flowers you're smelling, you suddenly see a bee inside a dahlia or something like that. So, yeah, I get very excited about American dippers. There.
Yeah, there is so much wildlife along there. On that exact same walk, on the walk back towards my car, a coyote jumped out in front of me and crossed the trail. And I'd never seen a coyote on that trail before. And a lot of people walk their dogs on that trail too, even off leash occasionally. So that got me thinking, but he wasn't hanging around, but he was very healthy looking coyote.
Yeah. The city of Bellevue has positioned a wildlife camera in that park. And I was able to, they were able to share those, it was videos and stills taken over the past 2 years. And they got some wonderful shots of our local black bears and bobcats, coyotes, of course, deer. I'm not remembering a raccoon, but we know they're probably in there.
Yeah, they're pretty much everywhere, yeah, aren't they?
Yeah. And I have seen in one of the sediment ponds that the city has put in along Coal Creek to trap, there is still excessive sediment coming down the creek because of all the erosion from the mining years. But in one of these sediment ponds, I got a photo of a black bear track in the little shoreline of the muds next to the pond. So we know they're there. Luckily, you won't see them. Pretty much.
Yeah. So it's kind of amazing that all of this is, when you live here in Bellevue, Seattle, Issaquah, this sort of east side and Seattle area, even Renton, and, you know, is right next door. It's literally right next door. Like, you aren't having to go 45 minutes up to the mountain or an hour and a half up to the mountain. It's really right there. And it's available for everybody to enjoy. And it's kind of I think the Pacific Northwest is one of these areas that we are so intertwined with our wildlife and with our nature and our woods and our forests that sometimes I don't think we appreciate it as much as we should. And when we hear about somebody going and building a development next to or in a park, you kind of think, oh, well, yeah, you know, we've got to build them somewhere. But mm-hmm. I don't think people realize how special that area really is for us and how important this sort of project like Save Coal Creek is, not just for our area, but for other areas like it across the state, across the country, across the world. There's always these really important little areas that need protecting. Because if we don't really make that effort, they're going to be gone. And I love that people from our area joined together and decided that they needed to make the Save Coal Creek project and have really been putting so much effort in. Which Issaquah Alps Trail Club, they were some of the first people who started this endeavor, correct?
Yes, and we are still, the Save Coal Creek effort is still a part of the Issaquah Alps Trails Club. And so we owe everything to their organization. It meant we didn't have to form our own nonprofit to handle, donations from the public. Issaquah Alps Trails Club has something like a 40-year history in Issaquah, and they were started by people who loved hiking and loved saving land. And so if you look at the public lands right next to Issaquah, it's and on Cougar Mountain, Squawk Mountain, Tiger Mountain, and Taylor Mountain, if I've got all four, they've saved tremendous amounts of public land. So they are not just a hiking club, and they are a major force in our area. As these urban areas grow, they're a major force for saving what we can. And I think as we grow, we are having to make tougher and tougher decisions. We know we need places for homes, for commercial. We need retail. We don't want people to drive forever to go buy stuff. So then we have to make decisions. What can we save as we grow as a city? The city of Bellevue is expected to add about 112,000 people by the year 2044. So we know we have to grow in terms of housing. But when there's a special place like this where it is actually could be a bridge between two public lands, and it has some wonderful history, the coal mining history, which is acknowledged on some pretty nicely designed signage on both sides of Lakemont. You can really learn a lot about our area. It's actually just amazing that we have the nature we do right there, because in the year 1910 or 12, there was a community of 1,000 people living there working in the mines. And what's happened since, the mining kind of dwindled out in the 1940s and 50s. But what's amazing is because we have this wonderful climate here with lots of rain and trees grow really quickly, and nature has kind of crawled all over those former mining areas. So this is a special place. We don't oppose housing in other parts of Bellevue or Issaquah. And so Issaquah Alps Trails Club support has gotten us where we are. It's a really great organization. And it's helping us to reach out to the communities around Bellevue. Again, kind of pointing to that, the population, the fact we're in a growing urban area. I think I estimated from the populations of all the suburbs around here, about 1.5 million people live within 15 miles of this housing development proposal. Within 15 miles of the location. So it's accessible to people who live in the city and who don't have a creek with salmon right next to their door, but they can quickly get on a bus or get, use a car, and they can get there, and they can be in a really different kind of experience of nature.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a really well-used park. Almost every time I go there, it's full of cars with people. But the funny thing is, it's such a big park, you never see any of the people. You'll see a parking lot full of cars right there, and maybe see one or two people the entire time you're there. So there's a lot of trails and a lot of room to explore, and it doesn't feel busy, which is nice.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about one more aspect of the wildlife, if we can call it a wildlife corridor, essentially, because most streams are used by a lot of animals to move through an environment. If the salmon are connecting the stream to the sound, you know, the lakes and to the sound eventually, ultimately that connection even goes all the way out to the whales, doesn't it? We've got our southern resident orcas, and I just did an episode last week with Rachel Aronson of the Quiet Sound Project, where they're working on making sure that the critical habitat for the whales is more welcoming and easier for the whales to hunt salmon, which is their only source of food. So when we're talking about the importance of the creek and the importance of the salmon in the creek and the rest of the wildlife and the trees that are keeping the creek cool enough for the salmon, we're also talking about the health of the Puget Sound itself, not just this one little area of Bellevue. It's one part of the whole puzzle that fits together. And it's an important part because it's so beautiful, and it's so necessary for all of the animals that live here, even the human animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. So the salmon are a major food item. Certainly the southern resident orcas have apparently been food deprived because our Chinook salmon population has been kind of hammered by development over the past 50 years. So there are bigger rivers around than Coal Creek. The Cedar River watershed is pretty well protected, has our drinking water sources for, I think, a lot of Seattle. Mm-hmm. So Coal Creek is relatively small, but I think it's, you can say that it's important because you don't know when changes will happen on any particular stream or river. And so having a number of streams, even the small ones, it gives us some confidence and some insurance that if something goes wrong in one part of Puget Sound, we've got other rivers and other creeks where the salmon can safely go back to reproduce. And you're right about the connections. We've learned through the science that the salmon that come that go back up to spawn, they most of them die after spawning, and so their decaying bodies add nutrients to the stream, and so that's helping those populations of insects and the dippers we talked about. So there's a whole connection with the wildlife that lives upstream as well.
Yeah. So why don't you get us up to date on the paperwork? What's going on with the legal standing of what's happening with Bellevue City Council and all of that?
Yes. So we've our work has sort of spread into several areas. A lot of the work we've done just talking to people at Red Town Trailhead was getting people to sign our petition opposing the development. And we were incredibly successful with that. Over 2 years, we've gotten 4,900 people who signed the petition opposing the development. The awareness is not as good as if we had a local newspaper. So there's definitely more we could do, but a lot of people are supporting this. And we took we made a scroll out of all the names of those petition signers. It was 21 feet long. And we took it to City Council. We spoke to City Council this fall a number of times, and they were really paying attention when we unrolled this 21-foot scroll of names. And so City Council is definitely on our side at this point. The Planning Department is the agency that's in charge of reviewing the development proposal. But we have gotten a lot of encouragement from them. And where we are in this process is Development Services is required to hold a public hearing before they issue any permits. And that has been scheduled for early the first week of March in 2023. We've hired an attorney because we think it's quite possible that even though we've amassed a lot of information showing the hazards of this development, it's quite possible that the hearing examiner, who's an independent attorney hired by the city, they may say, go ahead and issue those permits. And we have an attorney and we will appeal. And our attorney is very well qualified and has helped us put together all sorts of testimony and arguments for the public hearing. So that's one path that we've been following is putting together those arguments that will hopefully persuade the hearing examiner that this development should have had an EIS, that's an environmental impact statement. For some reason, development services, the planning department, did not require that, and we don't agree with that decision. So the other thing that we've been thinking about as we prepare for this public hearing, we've been thinking that we need to persuade City of Bellevue and King County, who has the park across the street, and state government that this that investing in a purchase of this property would be a really smart idea. Because it would benefit the public so clearly to have this wildlife corridor preserved and the hiking corridor preserved. And so we've been reaching out to our state representatives, our county council, and our city council in many conversations, and we are hearing a lot of support. We are hearing that they may be willing to put together a funding package that would interest the developer in selling for a park rather than selling and developing houses and selling. So we're starting to feel some really good encouragement in those conversations. Yeah, so we are likely, we haven't set a date yet, but we're likely to have a rally in South Bellevue, get all of our supporters together and kind of carry this petition to the developer and say, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who really are convinced this property has higher public benefit as a park. So, you know, it's always important to reach out to whoever, even if you disagree with someone, you've got to reach out to that entity and try to make something work. So we think it's probably time to do that now.
The rally is going to be at noon at Newcastle Beach Park in Bellevue. When else should people get involved in this?
There's several things you can do right away. So we have a Save Coal Creek page on the Issaquah Alps Trails Club website. So all you have to do is type in Save Coal Creek, that's one word, .org, and that will take you to that page on the website. And on that page, you can sign the petition. You can make a donation, which would help us with our legal expenses. And we will also post there the date and location of the rally. And we're thinking kind of late January, somewhere between the 15th of January and the 5th of February, like before Super Bowl, right? So so that's what we're thinking. We don't have that pinned down yet. But it would be terrific to get more support, everybody's signature. We'll post, and once you sign the petition, you will get our email updates, which are not very frequent. They're just like once every 2 months. So we don't, we don't inundate you with emails.
And then the meeting coming up in March, will that decide the fate?
It's certainly an important decision that the hearing examiner will make. So the hearing examiner will hear both from the public, you know, and any of your any of our listeners today who want to be involved will be able to make a statement at that. They have sessions in the evening as well as during the daytime. So people who feel passionate about this should feel empowered to speak up. But the hearing examiner, after the hearings are done, and she, it's a woman, will make a decision based on both the public testimony and all the comments that have been received over the past 2.5 years. And we've, our organization have sent many, many comments, you know, requesting the EIS and really offering critical, substantial comments about the impacts of this development. So the hearing examiner will say yes or no to issuing permits. if she says yes, we will appeal. And so I haven't done this before, so I don't know how long that appeal process might take.
Okay.
You know, could take a while.
March is our next big date for this particular project. So would it be helpful? I mean, this podcast has listeners from all over the world, 50 different countries at this point. While we do have quite a lot of listeners in Washington State, how useful is it for people from other areas to sign the petition, to call in, to leave notes or messages with their support?
I think it's very important. Obviously, if you live close by or are traveling through, you've actually experienced the beauty and the you know, just the uniqueness of this little spot surrounded by parkland and then urban areas. But I've stood at Red Town Trailhead asking people to sign the petition. I'm really impressed by the regional value of this location. People, so we have, you know, new young tech or other workers here in Bellevue, Puget Sound region, and their parents from all over the country come to visit them. I had visitors from Oregon, from Ohio. Because it is so accessible to the urban areas, you can kind of add it as a spot. You know, you can be going to the Seattle Sculpture Park on the waterfront, and then you can come over to Coal Creek in half an hour and be out in nature.
Yeah, I think that it is important for people to get involved in projects, in issues like this from different parts of the country, different parts of the world, because, you know, it's everybody's world and it's really a global community at this point. You know, what happens to animals in Africa, what happens to animals in India, what happens to animals in Washington State will affect the perspective and the outcome of our environment across the world for everyone. So I would say if anybody wants to sign that petition, get involved somehow, even if you don't live in the area, but you care about the environment, you care about the animals and the orcas and the salmon, you know, it affects you. And it's worth taking a moment and getting involved, even if it's just a little bit.
Yes, I like that idea. And I like that you're referring to people getting involved in their own location. One thing I really believe in is kind of looking around where you are right now, wherever you're standing or sitting, and going out and one of the places I did a lot of book studying back in New England, where I grew up, and I took all kinds of classes and I was in academia for a lot of years, but I read on the wall of this the library at the Marine Biological Lab in Woods Hole. Somebody had put up this little motto. It said, "Study nature, not books." And there I was, just reading books after book after book and journal articles and stuff. And I have had so much more, a different kind of learning from going out into my backyard or my front yard and just slowing down and looking at the nature around me. And instead of my brain sort of turning off if I hear a bunch of birds chattering, if you start to slow down and try to tease out, well, what is that? Is that the junco or is that the spotted towhee that's in my backyard? And you just start learning the minute you go outside. So I encourage everybody to do that, to fine tune your senses and to take a step back, walk a little more slowly. And if you are blessed with having a child with you, you will kind of automatically do that, because you're suddenly realizing they have not experienced these things before.
Yeah, sharing it with my kids has been such a fun experience. I love that my daughter once yelled, "Mom, let's go science down by the pond." You know what? Yeah, let's go science by the pond. That sounds like a good idea.
Yep.
And she was just so fascinated by all the animals and things that she could see down there. So it's great. And thank you so much. Why don't we finish up with our last questions, which is the first of, if there was a book that you could gift to all of the listeners, what would that be?
Yeah, great question. So I'm going to recommend a book by a naturalist named Douglas Tallamy, and he wrote Nature's Best Hope, which was published in 2020. I learned a lot from that. I thought I already knew tons of stuff about nature in my own backyard, but he points out one thing that really impressed me. He talks about how in the spring, if you've got, say, a fruit tree, some caterpillars, you know, eating the apples, those caterpillars are hatched out of the eggs just at the perfect time in the spring for the baby birds to be offered those caterpillars by their parents, and that caterpillars are incredibly nutritious. They're full of protein and fat. It's exactly what a baby bird needs. So I just had never thought about that timing. And the fact that your own backyard, and he's a big advocate of planting native plants. They basically support a whole variety of insect life that's already in our neighborhoods because that's their native habitat. So definitely read Douglas Tallamy's book.
Great. I will get that one. Okay. Now, would you share a early or first childhood memory of your connection with animals?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is kind of a sad one.
Sometimes they tend to be, I find.
Yeah, I was probably about 5 or 6 years old, and we had a big jar with some pollywogs, some tadpoles in it. My mom had taken us to a pond, and we'd brought back these, cute little wiggly things, and we were learning about them. But and we had some fish food that we were supposed to very carefully parcel out to these tadpoles. And at some point, I was really, really angry at my mother for whatever. And I dumped too much fish food in there, and kaboom, they did not survive. So I have a guilt trip here. I have always felt like, okay, Sally, you've got to be a little bit more aware of what you're doing. And, a 5-year-old temper tantrum, I guess it happens. But yeah, it's I haven't forgotten it. So I guess I carry a little guilt with me.
So what do you think is the deal with animals?
Well, I've been really aware that I have this longing to be involved with animals in a way that I, as a suburbanite, I really don't have the opportunity to enjoy. My first 4 years was on a farm in upstate New York. And there were chickens and cows, and I think that's all we had. But somehow that is embedded in my brain as an essential part of life, that we really need, whether these animals are domestic or wild, there's something really essential about their place in our life. And I'm definitely not one who thinks that we can get along without nature, without these animals. I would love to have a little farm in the countryside of Washington State with a couple of goats, but I'm really a suburbanite. I'm here for other reasons. And I will never do that, but it doesn't mean I won't kind of look with a little bit of envy at some of my friends who do have the little farm with the goats. I just think we learn from them, and I don't know. I can't describe it. I think it's really essential. So my love of wildlife is different than that, because I know they don't need me. They need me to stay away from them mostly. But I think nature is, it gives me, you know, some of my highs every day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the Deal with Animals podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Marika. I look forward to hearing more of your podcasts.
That was Sally Lawrence of the Save Coal Creek Project. Sally has a BA in biology from Brown University and an MS in biological oceanography from the University of Rhode Island. Before she retired, she was a water quality specialist in Washington Department of Ecology. You can see everything going on with the Save Coal Creek Project at savecoalcreek.org. Links to that and more are in the show notes. Next week, we'll be moving further out into the waters of the Pacific Northwest and talking to Quiet Sound Program Director Rachel Aronson about a recent and hopefully ongoing project to help protect critical habitat for the southern resident orcas. I want to give a shout out this week to my first listeners in Thailand. I hope you're all enjoying listening in. I've had some of my most memorable animal experiences in Southeast Asia, and particularly in Thailand, with free-living dogs and the local wildlife. If you've had any great experiences with wildlife, I'd love to hear them. Please send me a message on Facebook or at thedealwithanimals.com. If you enjoyed this show and have any questions or comments about this episode or about the podcast in general, go to thedealwithanimals.com and leave me a message. This is also a great place to go if you're interested in being a guest or have an idea for a series or episode. And don't forget to follow and review wherever you listen to your podcast, as it helps us become more visible to other listeners. I'm your host, Marika Bell. I'd like to thank Kai Stranskoff for the theme music and Natasha Matsark for help with editing. You can see links to guest book recommendations, as well as their websites and affiliated organizations, in the show notes and at thedealwithanimals.com. Thank you for joining me as we try to answer the question, what's the deal with animals?
So, what do you think is the deal with animals?
The Deal with Animals is part of the iROAR Animal Podcast Network.